Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
And welcome, I'm Marcellus Wiley, Clippers fan. And he's Emmanuel Acho.
President Clippers fan.
And he's about to hate on my boys. So let's get it started with my boys, the Clippers, who won game one against the Mavericks last night. But it wasn't easy. Luka Doncic scored 42 points in the NBA record in the postseason debut. But the drama went down in the third quarter. Kristaps Porzingis was ejected for getting involved in a Doncic and Marcus Morris's altercation. At the time, the Mavs were up by five. Clippers then outscored them 52-39 for the win. After the game, a few A-listers were upset about the Porzingis ejection. LeBron James tweeted, "Man, that was bogus as hell, man. Come on, man." Former Mavericks great Dirk Nowitzki tweeted, "That ejection is super soft." Even Patrick Mahomes got into it tweeting, "Half a Billy talking about, that's trash, man." So, Acho, did the Clippers look like a championship-level team last night? Yes? Okay, moving on.
No, bro, and even no, you know they didn't. Ooh. Now, look, I'm born and raised in Dallas, so I'm a resident Mavericks fan when it comes down to it. That's my fallback.
Are you holding
outside
on
of that? A LeBron fan, I'm a Mavs fan. Mm. I seen that game, bro, and I said, okay, Marcellus told me that the Clippers, they aren't regular season. They're not a regular season team.
Nah.
So the Clippers going to turn it on, come to playoffs.
Yeah.
That's what Marcellus told me. I believe big bro. Mm. That's what I do.
That's what you do.
Clippers come out. It's 18-2 run.
18-2.
I'm like, yo, Marcellus was right. Marcellus has never lied to me.
Nope, haven't. Still won't.
But then, hold up.
Hold up.
But then, the Mavericks went on a 48-18 point run. Mavericks had the game in control. The 7-seed Mavericks. So I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. Mm. Maybe Marcellus had lied to me this whole time. Mm. Clippers supposed to look like a championship team, and they was about to lose to the 7-seed Dallas Mavericks. Mm. Yeah, the Dallas Mavericks got Luka. Luka dog. But these Clippers, who have the best combo wings the game has ever seen since Jordan and Pimpin, the best combo wings the game has ever seen since LeBron and D-Wade, the Clippers got Paul George, the Clippers got Kawhi. They couldn't do nothing to stop Luka. So did they look like a championship team? Not the same Clippers team that would have lost if Porzingis wouldn't have got ejected.
Mm.
No, they ain't look like a championship team.
Oh.
And I don't want to hear no bias come out your mouth either.
Oh, man. Might get that LASIK surgery. Might need that, big dog. Because I don't think you know what a championship team looks like. Yes, the Clippers look like a championship-level team.
I can't wait for this.
You know.
I can't wait
you
for
know
this.
I don't lead with feelings.
You don't lead with nonsense.
I don't. I lead with these facts. And you millennials are funny to me because y'all love results.
Here he goes.
But y'all hate the process. Y'all care about how it looks more than how it was made and how it really is. So I want to let everyone know that the Clippers last night did what a lot of champions do. They struggle in the first series. Let's talk about this first series because last year there was a team that won a championship since you watch basketball. That was the name of Toronto Raptors, correct? Toronto Raptors went out there and found themselves in a series, down. What? Did the Raptors trail 0-1 in the first round? You mean the NBA champs can actually lose the first game of the first series and still wear the crown? Yes. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how they were also down 2 in the semis and in the conference championship and still won the championship. But you know me, I'm a full screen king, so I really want to kill you. When you're down, I stomp on you. Let's look at the last 10 NBA champs first round results, shall we? Oh, wow. By the math, over half of these teams actually lost the game in the first round and still won the championship. We ain't even lose, and you up here saying we don't look like a championship team. Retort.
Bro, you said that the Clippers, they capitalize like championship teams do. Mm. The Clippers capitalized off poor refereeing. That's what happened. That's not what we're doing. It's a fact. What we're doing is telling
the
truth.
Is that the third team?
What we're doing is telling
the Zebras.
Think about this. The Clippers were down by 6 before Porzingis gets ejected. They immediately go on a 16-5 run. Mm. The Clippers, bro, when they're trailing by 4 going into the fourth quarter, Sir Marcellus, they've lost their last 8 games. So if you beat them going into the fourth, you essentially have beat them. Not my opinion. Statistical, empirical data supports that information.
Mm.
But when your second best player gets ejected for trying to stand up for the leader, for trying to stand up for the young bull, and you get thrown out, it wasn't even a fair fight. And while still not being a fair fight, your Clippers didn't even dominate the matchup. Just call a spade a spade. They didn't look like a championship team. Did they get the win? Yeah, I'm not taking that from them. Did they get the win? They did that.
Okay.
But did they look like a championship team while doing it? Nah.
Won't we alter what you think a championship team looks like? Because I gave you last year's champion that actually lost the first game. We didn't lose that, but you'd say that's not a champion. Then I gave you the last 10 years and talked about over half of them have lost in the first round, but you didn't want to go there. So now let's talk about over the last 17 years when they first started to go to a seven-round first-round series, seven-game first-round series. You know how many of those teams in those 17 years actually lost a game in that series? 13 of them. That's 76%, brother. You want to do some math? You want to keep killing me with stats? Then we want to talk about how many of them lost two games in that same series? Over a third of them. We haven't even lost yet. This is the first time in the bubble that we had every single player active and ready to go. And now you're going to use we struggled against a team that can shoot against us.
Your best argument is your first
everything
sentence. Your best argument was your first
sentence. You're millennial?
No, what's the championship team look like? The only way to say the Clippers look like a championship team is if you want to grade on a curve. Because as I was looking about it and talking to the producers this morning, I said, you know what? The only argument Marcellus has is if you grade on a curving scale. You know in school when you get a C, but everybody else got a C, so your teacher go ahead and bump you up to an A-minus? That's what's really going down. Look at the West. Lakers don't look like a championship team. Trailblazers, they've won their last four games by one possession. They don't look like a championship team. Rockets don't look like a championship team. Thunder don't look like a championship team. So the only argument you have is that, you know what? Nobody else really looks like a championship team. Well, you want to go to the East. Sixers don't look like a championship team. Pacers don't look like a championship team. Only team that looks like a championship team is the Raptors. That's your only defense is to say you want to grade on a curve. That's literally the only argument you have.
Is your optic nerve connecting to your brain to tell you, oh, what I see is a championship team and that's the way it is? Or are you going to use evidence? You're going to actually use what these teams have done in the course of winning the championship, the marathon that you must run to win a championship.
Y'all never started running. You told me you was going to start in the playoffs.
Did we win? Is that the case for all teams yesterday? No, we took care of business. What's the ultimate goal? You always tell me.
To win.
To win.
To win.
But now we get into a complexion argument.
You asked
about
me championship team, though. The question was not, did the Clippers win last night? The question was, you read the question.
Yes.
Did the Clippers look like a championship-level team?
Absolutely. When you have your dynamic duo giving you what,
29-27.
And then you just got Marcus Morris just sitting there like.
He got you bucket, 19.
And he's sitting there with Montrez, sitting there with Lou Williams. That's our tier two. Then we got tier three when Pat Brev could kick in, Zubac could kick in. That's the thing. This team is a team that is about a war of attrition. You keep thinking about a peak performance team, like the Lakers, dynamic duo, and then we got to pray and hope after that. The Clippers are like, look, we're going to wear you down. We understand. And even in a wear down performance like last night, they still went out there and won and took care of business. Let's move on to something he may know a little more about, baseball. He woke up hot on this one. Who is known for his unwritten rules of the game of baseball is, but like this Padres, Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a grand slam in the eighth inning last night against the Rangers. Problem was, he hit it when San Diego was up by 7 runs on the 3-0 pitch. And Padres manager Jace Tingler didn't really have Tatis's back after the game. Take a listen.
A lot of our guys have green light, 3-0. But in this game in particular, we had a little bit of a comfortable lead, and we're not trying to run up the score or anything like that.
I've been in this game since I was a kid, man, and I know a lot of unwritten rules, and this time I was kind of lost on this one. From those experiences, you gotta learn from it. Probably next time I take a pitch.
So, Acho, did Fernando Tatis Jr. deserve to be criticized here, if you heard?
Bro, absolutely not. Right. Anybody, last time I played baseball was T-ball back in, like, seventh grade.
Okay? Does that count?
It counts for something, okay? I was hitting them things, okay? But if you criticize Tatis Jr. for this, you're completely undermining the sport. Bro, this is
the
not...
The sport of baseball?
Yes. Right. This is not a video game. You know, Marcellus, if we on Madden, if we on the sticks, you know what it is. It's 21-0, past the sticks, right?
Right.
Have unwritten rules
Skunk rule.
This ain't a video game. This is real life. Professional sports. Dudes out there making real money. If you don't want them to score, then maybe you should pitch better. Bruh, let me tell you, this is how I know I'm not biased. 2012. My brother played for the Arizona Cardinals.
Beast?
I just finished. He was doing his thing. Rookie sack record.
Yeah.
Playing for the Arizona Cardinals. I'm looking. I'm like, wait a second. Are they losing 51-0? Getting skunked by the Seahawks.
Right.
I'm looking at the tape, and I'm like, wait a second. Did my brother at the end right there, who you see, just give up the touchdown? He didn't give it up, but he ain't stop it to let the Seahawks go up 58-0?
What's up with
he
your brother?
He called me after that. I'm he like, hey, bro, if you ain't want them to score, you better get off the block and stop them. That's how sports go in professional sports.
Yeah.
There are no run rules. There are no, wait, you let them score too many points, right? My brother taught me that lesson that day. He called me. He said, hey, bro, don't get embarrassed like that. That's when I realized it's not about, there's no gentleman scores. This isn't a video game, Marcellus. Mm. This is real life. No, he don't deserve to be criticized.
Of course he doesn't deserve to be criticized, but let's be real about this because I want to respect the sport of baseball, and this is going to be very hard for me to do because in their culture, which is a gathering of opinions and customs and values, they subscribe to it, and obviously we don't. We sitting here as football players with very few unwritten rules, but we do have some.
What, like, please, remind me, sir.
You ever seen a kneel down?
Look at your face.
And a kneel down. When it's time for that game to end and that team walking up to the line doing like this, you know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to take it easy. The game's over. And every now and then you see somebody say, gung-ho, bop. And then we got problems, right? So in every sport, there are unwritten rules. Now, baseball's unwritten rules are interesting. And this one in particular, because even his manager kind of looked at him sideways. Now, remember, his manager was in Texas for 13 years prior to this. So more of it being the unwritten rule, I think the manager, Tingler's just sitting there saying, hey, man, can you take care of my dogs? They used to be taking care of me. And now we're in this situation. But if you catch me in a parking lot and it's a stop sign there, you know what that is? That's not a law. That's not a rule to me. That's a suggestion. It's just basically saying, can you stop? I'm not stopping, y'all. I'm letting y'all know.
What this was?
To me, he gets...
suggestion.
Well, look at the stakes. Look at the rewards. He is now leading the league in home runs. Think about the stakes. How does he get his contract? How does he get paid? He's a young star. He's not bona fide yet. He's not already there yet. How does he get to the next threshold? By actually going out there in this weird... In our sport, you could pad your stats. When you see crumbs out there, you eat even more.
You have to.
But in baseball, it's a weird way that we're all supposed to sign a consent form that we're all not given.
But here's what I don't get, Marcellus. This is the one thing that really it perplexed me. You got the Rangers complaining about this, right? They were down 10-3 at the time of the Grand Slam. But a day prior, the Rangers are down 10-4.
Don't do that.
And they have the tying run at bat, came back in the ninth inning, and could have tied the game up. Mm. So you got to realize six or seven runs, it's not to say that the game is put away.
Yeah.
It's not like the score was 30-3, which, by the way, the Rangers embarrassed the Orioles back in 2007, but nobody wants to talk about that.
History.
So I just don't get how – what LeVar tell you? He went out saying cast the first stone. I don't get how the Rangers out here throwing stones when they were literally in the same situation, Marcellus, 24 hours prior and nearly came back. It's soft. Yeah. I said it. It's soft.
Well, it is soft. And it is soft without premise because they think if you get blown out, if you get skunked, if you got to give up the joystick, that hurts your feelings. You know what really hurts your feelings? And I've been in them. Close losses, one-point losses, Music City Miracle losses. When you're sitting there and your imagination runs away with you, one play away, if I would have did this, why did I jump off sides? Those are the moments. If you're going to have a mercy rule, protect my energy from a one-play situation, not when there's no way we could have won.
To your point, you know what's even worse? What's even more embarrassing is taking the pitch. Because now it's like, you know what? We're beating you so bad, I'm going to take it easy on you. Mm. Ain't nothing more degrading to another man playing a professional sport when it's, I'm so much better than you, I'm not even going to try. Mm. That would have been a real shame. But to clown this dude for trying to pad his stats to a degree, that ain't on him.
Yeah.
It's not on him.
Baseball needs justice reform because he gets the grand slam, he gets his name blown up, and Manny Machado goes up there and gets the pitch thrown behind him. He's like, hey, dog, I ain't commit that crime. Y'all better look out for me. Coming up, Tristan Thompson is back with us. Turks and Caicos, excuse him. We'll see if he thinks another title for Kawhi Leonard puts him in the GOAT conversation with LeBron. Plus, at the top of the hour, Joe Judge is treating the New York Giants like the little Giants. I'll tell you why this won't end well. Next, speak for yourself.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's talk Kawhi Leonard, who has a chance for a third NBA title. But that's not it. It would be his third title with his third team. If Kawhi wins another ring and adds another finals MVP as well, Vince Carter thinks that would put him in the GOAT conversation, saying, quote, a third championship for Kawhi would just bump him to that next level, that upper echelon of basketball players in the history of the game. Kawhi puts himself in the conversation of one of the greatest in our league's history because of what he can accomplish, particularly if he wins MVP. MJ, Kobe, and I think LeBron are all in that conversation for greatest of all time. Kawhi, you win three chips, three MVPs? He's now in that conversation piece as well. We joined now by the one and only, ladies and gentlemen, a man who needs no introduction, Tristan Thompson. It's been too long, my brother.
Yes.
So, Tristan, you get us started, bro. Do you agree with Vince Carter here?
All respect to VC. You know, he's the OG. You know, he's Eric Cannon, Vince Handy. I get what he's saying. I get what Vince is saying. You know, yes, Kawhi, Robert Horry, John Sally, you know, the three guys who win championships with three different teams. But obviously, Kawhi is in a whole different, you know, level compared to, you know, Big Shot Bob and John Sally. So I get what he's saying. I think out of respect to 23 LeBron and Kawhi, I think it's too soon to do that comparison and say that, you know, he's just as good as LeBron. And this is my reason because, you know, Marcellus, Acho, you guys already know, you know, in the locker room, sometimes guys are the OG and sometimes you just, it's like Jay-Z and Drake. Sometimes you just don't argue about it just because it's just too much different era. It's too much years in between. So for me, as a current player, I'd be like, you know, LeBron's year 17, Kawhi's year 9. You know, out of respect for LeBron and what he's done in this league, I would say, you know, he has a bigger resume. But for Kawhi, in year 9, he's got a lot of potential. So you don't know. They both can win more championships. But I think as of right now, today, in August, I would say it's a little too early for that, just out of respect for both players.
Tristan, you so kind, bro. This is how you know Tristan just now starting to do media, because he's still being nice. let me say what Tristan wanted to say. Heck no. Vince Carter ain't putting Kawhi in the GOAT conversation. No. Vince Carter, he tripping on this one. And let me tell you why. You know, a coach told me once, he said, you got to be consistently good to be great. Well, you got to be consistently great to be excellent. You got to be consistently excellent to be a GOAT. And Kawhi just hasn't been in the conversation long enough. Like Tristan just said, Kawhi been playing for 9 years. Kawhi came in the league, what was it, 2011, 2012. You know, the first year of LeBron's 8 straight championship run, going to 8 straight championships, Kawhi just doesn't have a big enough body of work. To Tristan's point, it's not to say Kawhi can't get there, but let's keep facts facts and let's be real with what needs to be real. Kawhi has never won an NBA MVP. He ain't never won an MVP. Kawhi has never been the best player in the league for one season. And y'all want to make him the best player of all time or put him in the conversation for best of all time? You got to be the best for just one season first. LeBron, multiple chips plus multiple MVPs. Kobe, multiple chips, MVPs. Kareem, multiple chips. Magic. So let's just have a real conversation, because this ain't even a serious conversation. Marcellus, don't go saying nothing crazy, bruh, because I know you the type to start talking records.
Oh, right, y'all want me to add, no, say nothing crazy, let me say this right now. Oh, man.
You the type.
I will put my Clippers mask on, but I don't want to rob y'all of this logic right here. Look, we should have expected that out of you, Tristan, man. That Toronto...
That education?
That citizenship, man. You got to represent Toronto to the fullest. Look, that was a franchise that never, ever saw the finals until Kawhi came there. Not only saw the finals, they won it all. So I understand where you're coming from, but Vince Carter out here tripping in these streets. Look, I know he just retired, and maybe he... having second thoughts, and maybe Kawhi can hook him up on the Clippers. I don't know where this is coming from, because this is blasphemous on many a levels. And I'm a Kawhi Leonard fan. Y'all already know. One, he said, you know, the three, as he was talking about the GOATs. Three GOATs, first of all. Greatest of all time doesn't have plural, so it should be only one. But there's three. MJ, LeBron, and Kobe. Where is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar if we really just going to be extending this to the three? And Kareem should certainly be in there. I digress. Now let's also talk about the fact that there's too much explanation needed when you mention Kawhi Leonard's name.
That's a bar, Marcellus.
With MJ, that's LeBron and a GOAT. Y'all ever go to somebody's house, probably like Tristan or some of his friends, you know, them real fancy houses, them nice houses, and you walk in there, and you just walking in like, nice house. You ain't got much detail to it. You just, this is sick. This is fresh. And then they stop you in your tracks. They say, no. You see that rug right there? Oh, that's a gablika, blika, dika, dika, fool. And I'm like, oh, nah, I just thought it was cute. And then they're like, oh, do you see that?
Like that.
And then, did you see that art over there? And that's a gablika, dika, dika, dika. And you're like, oh, I just thought it was a painting. All right, cool. You could have got that off Crenshaw if you would have really. Anyway, here's the point. When you have to explain so much about something, maybe it ain't as great and valuable as you think. So when I hear Kawhi Leonard's name, on this echelon, on this level, it takes a little too much explanation for my own liking.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's just, we all know Kawhi got the potential. Yes, if Kawhi can win with the Clippers this year and run off maybe two more championships, and let's say LeBron wins another championship with the Lakers, and they're both retired, yeah, we can have this conversation. But as of right now, especially as a ball player, you guys know, like, everyone's situation is different. You know, LeBron, when... You know, in high school, getting picked the chosen one, SI cover. First high school player on national TV versus Melo against Oak Hill. National TV game. Kobe, all those guys are talking about it. Getting interviewed, you know, the late, great Kobe. Everyone, that LeBron has been hyped and talked about and been pumped through our media circuit since he's been a junior. You know, Kawhi, kid from Inland Empire, went to a mid-major school, gets drafted 15 to the Spurs, and I'm in the same draft. And when I saw him get drafted to the Spurs, I'm like, man, that's probably one of the best situations in the draft.
Right,
getting
right.
drafted at high, being part of just Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Greg Popovich, just giving the opportunity where he can learn to be a pro and be in a championship bust mentality situation. That's something that LeBron didn't have the luxury. You know, LeBron could have went number two like Darko Milicic and sat on the bench with Detroit and won a championship that year when Darko won, but he was in a situation in Cleveland with Ricky Davis and Darius Miles where there was no winning culture there, so he had to form that. And obviously, he fell short the first time in Cleveland where he had to go to Miami. So everyone's route to becoming a champion was different. But I think with Vince, it's a little too early, Vince. I know you know, you just retired and stuff, but you know, you just gotta wait a little bit. Let's just wait a little bit.
The thing is, Kawhi, it's not even Kawhi's fault.
Right.
Kawhi's just disqualified from the conversation right now. Like, and it's not because he hasn't yet retired, because then that would make LeBron disqualified from the conversation. He just hasn't put in enough work to be in the greatest of all-time conversation. Mm. You talk about a guy like the late, great Kobe. You're talking about a guy who played 20 seasons, gave you about 15, 16 good seasons, gave you several chips. You talk about a guy like LeBron going on 17, about to push to 18 seasons after this one done. He don't look like he's slowing down no time soon. You talk about Jordan, came, left, came back, still going. You talk about a guy like Kareem, who Marcellus said. It's like, You can't put Kawhi. Honestly, these are the kind of conversations that get you hot, Tristan. If you start thinking about it too long, these are the kind of conversations that make you go, come on, bro.
Barbershop talks.
That's barbershop talk, but it's that crazy talk. This that one barber who say he cutting the head and he like, hey, y'all think Kawhi won the greatest of all time? And everybody's looking at him like, shut up, bro.
That's how you walk out looking like this.
Just worry about my fade. Just worry about lining me up and getting this paper right because you're talking crazy.
Hey, man, look, this is not a shot at Kawhi Leonard, but
it's not.
One of my attributes is no matter who you are, I'm going to tell you what I think. And a lot of times I find myself in trouble because on group texts with my family, my friends, even my wife, they expect to be protected because of who they are to me and kinship. And I'm like, nah, these facts don't discriminate. They come at you as well. Kawhi is not even a career 20-point scorer per year. Uh-oh. Like he's not that guy. He is the most improved player maybe in NBA history from hello to right now in terms of how much his game has grown. Remember, he was almost one-dimensional when he came out in terms of just being a defensive presence, and he's just been adding to his arsenal offensively year after year. And now he seems like a magnet to championships. With that said, the conversation we're having about MJ, LeBron, Kobe, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, they don't invite Kawhi to that conversation just yet.
Year 9. Marcellus.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's too early.
He's still a young pup. He's still young. It's too early, but let's all know Kawhi's potential. He could definitely potentially be a career 20-point per game scorer. And if he wins a couple more chips, he could definitely join first class with the GOATs. So he's definitely got a chance. It's there, because I see you with your mask face on, your face mask, whatever they call it. So I know you believe in him.
Yeah, hey, they gotta know I rap.
But
yeah.
Like Tristan said, Kawhi got that potential. But all potential is having or showing the capacity to achieve more. Kawhi, continue to achieve more, you're gonna be in that GOAT conversation. Coming up,
your
Washington football team made history yesterday, hiring Jason Wright, the first black team president in NFL history.
Why gotta be black?
He joins the show next. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai. Racist because he is black. Racist.
Welcome back. Huge news in the NFL yesterday with the Washington football team hiring the first black team president in league history. Jason Wright spent 7 years in the NFL as a running back, and now he's in charge of running the team's business organization and, more importantly, helping to turn them back into a winner. Jason, thanks for being here, big dog. Let's get right to it. No team name and no headphones, so I know you're ready for this. when and how did the process of becoming the Washington football team president begin?
Yeah, it began, a little while ago. It's actually pretty recent, but it started by something that you might have expected to happen. I'm a business executive, former player in D.C. The Snyders own the team in D.C. It's almost inevitable that our paths would cross, and it just happened at the right time where they were looking for a business executive. And through a series of conversations, which frankly were surprising to me, we didn't actually start talking about finances right away. We got there. We didn't start talking about all that stuff right away. It was rooted in values and culture and language, like inclusive and transparent and accountable. And for me, it got real concrete because they started to talk about what Coach Rivera is doing on the football side to establish that. And we brainstormed what that could look like on the business side. We shared our individual past failures, and it got really real to the point where at the end of several conversations, we felt like there was good alignment in our values and our view of culture, and we were excited to work together.
I love that. You said it got really real. So let's get real. You're an incredibly smart man. You've accomplished a lot. You don't necessarily need to explain your accomplishments to me or anybody else, but you can. But there's clearly a perception out there, Jason Wright, that you got the job because you're a black man. I've gone out and I've tried to defend that myself. But what would you say to those who say you got this job because you're black?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an uncommon thing, right? Y'all have experienced this at some point as well, and that's an unfortunate thing that exists across several organizations in the world. What I'll say, though, is this. You know, if there's a white brother out there who played 7 years in the NFL, got a top five MBA, became a partner at a consulting firm and led businesses through transformations for the last 8 years, and I beat him out because I'm black, I apologize. Mm.
Damn, he dead at that. Look. One of the people that says that is actually me, so he has to defend it against me because you know what's crazy, Jason? Real talk. You check all the boxes, but you check the most important box in this current climate when we're talking about being black, and that's, as you said, is a cherry on top. But the reality is you're qualified. But to look at it from a different position, let's not talk about the white guy that may check all the boxes, but the climate right now, because that job vacancy was there for 8+ months. And then all of a sudden you come in and some say to swoop and save the day. What do you say to that your job description is going to be grander than just team president of business operations?
Well, I think any chief executive already plays a bit of a public-facing role, right? If you look at corporations around the world, the CEOs that I've counseled, a lot of our time is talking to them about how they face the world, how they are a representative of the organization that they are leading. And so I expected that to be part of the role. And insofar as my blackness is part of that, like, I'm unapologetically black, so that will be present in how I engage with the public and the media, et cetera, in that process. But I think the important thing to think about on this dimension is that, you know, diversity or whatever phrase you want to use to describe it is not just valuable from an optics standpoint. It's actually valuable from a business standpoint, because when you have diverse voices in the room, all the research says you make better decisions and your organization is more profitable over time. And I'm the business executive. I'm here to make dollars and cents. And so I'm in for that, whether it's me or anybody else bringing that diverse perspective to the table.
Now, your team, Washington football team, has been riddled with scandals. Dan Snyder has fought changing the name. There's been reports of inappropriate sexual conduct. How are you prepared to face these kinds of issues?
Yeah, and those need to be taken incredibly seriously. And actually, the steps that the Snyders took prior to me taking this role encouraged me that things are moving in the right direction. They're evidence of real culture change because they brought in an independent investigator. I work with a lot of companies. They don't want to do that. That's pulling back the curtain and letting somebody else in your house look in every nook and cranny, surface the good, the bad, and the ugly. That is a really risk, right? That's a really risky, vulnerable thing to do. You want people looking under your bed? So it is a real thing that they have chosen to do that, and it gave me confidence. And I've actually led transformations like this with companies in very similar situations. And depending on what the facts are, I don't know yet. I start on Monday. I know the several routes that it'll take to get there. And so I actually feel quite confident in taking on that challenge. It's going to be complex. It will be challenging. It's going to require real engagement with people. But I feel really confident that we're going to get there.
Now, I think everybody's looking at this backwards. Everybody's saying, first black team president in NFL history. Great for the Redskins. Great for the Redskins. But then I said, wait a second. This brother played in the league. Top education, both at Northwestern and then University of Chicago, MBA. This dude had options. Everybody's saying, well, congrats to the Redskins. Why did they want you? But let me ask you, or to the Washington football team, why did they want you? But let me ask you, why did you want the Washington football team?
You know what? I appreciate that question. there are two streams of my identity that I wasn't sure were ever going to come together. My formative years as a football player, 7 years old, my pops as my coach, playing in the Southern California sun, going to Northwestern, winning a Big Ten championship and making those lifelong connections with my teammates and going to the league and toiling for years just to make it, you know, getting fired every other week and then finally becoming a stable player and having a longer career and being a team captain. It formed who I am as a person, is part and parcel with football. And then since then, being an analytic thinker and a business leader and helping organizations transform, you know, in what other role do those two streams come together? In the context of an organization whose leadership has said, we're going to pivot and go in a cultural direction that I believe in. And then I don't have to move. I already live in the DMV. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer to be excited about this. And I'm not afraid of big challenges. That excites me. Something that was boring and rote, it doesn't suit me real well.
Yeah, I catch that humble brag. He ain't got to move. He already got the NFL money. He already got a mansion. What y'all tripping on? All right, look, Jason, you've been tasked with changing the culture. I caught that. Not all team presidents are asked to do that, change the culture. I saw that in the fine print of some of the articles written about you. You feel an added responsibility with that?
No, I actually think every chief executive should be challenged with not necessarily changing the culture. Right? I mean, that might not be changing the culture, but it might be improving the culture. Because this is my belief, and the data, again, backs it. You'll see me say data a lot when y'all talk to me. But the data backs it up, is that business performance is sustained when you have a healthy organization, when people want to work there. They feel valued. They know that their voices are heard. You have diversity in the right places. Organizational health boosts performance over time. And so I actually think every chief executive should be as concerned with organizational health as they are with business performance, because you can't really sustain one without the other. I just am coming into a point where the outside in perception, and I'll find out how it really is that the culture needs transformation in a fundamental way.
Mm. Jason, we keep it real on this show, bro. That's what we do best. So I'm going to keep it a buck with you here. Mm. We all know players don't trust the suits. The players are in the locker room downstairs. The coaches, the presidents, the owners, they are upstairs. The players predominantly black, 70.4%. The ownership, management, predominantly white. There's a dichotomy between player and suit. You were a player. You now wear the suit. How are you going to fix that rift? How are you going to mend what is inherently fractured?
That's a good question. I think I'm a little bit of a walking experiment on this, right? I can tell you what won't happen. I'm not going to jettison my identity as a player. I won't forget my time as an NFLPA rep. Those are aspects of my identity that will apply to my thinking, how I lead the business, how I engage with all the various different sides of the business. But I also won't forget, you know, my time as a senior executive in corporate America, helping other senior executives make tough decisions. I'm actually eager to see how those all come together for me. But I think the thing that I've put in place, just to give you a little bit of you know, transparency on how I operate, I keep a set of counselors and mentors around me at all times, and they call me to the carpet. They know my values. They know how I want to act. And they will call me on the phone and say, hey, Jason, this decision you made or this way you appeared in the media, that's not you, man. What are you on? And I think those folks are going to help me find my way in this new role of how those two identities blend together. I think one thing that helps, though, is I'm on the business side. And so I'm going to be applying so much more of my business brain. Coach Rivera oversees the players. I'm not in player personnel. I don't have secret draft boards. I'm not in anything related to game planning, nor do I want to be. Nor do I want to be. The nerd in me wants to be in the business. I think it will be a little less relevant, but I'm anxious to see how I evolve as a leader in this.
Goodness, you said the nerd in you, man. Oh, good Lord.
Talking to some nerds.
Oh, you're talking to some nerds up here. Oh, man, don't let nothing fool you. I am a big nerd. And I'm older than you, but listening to you and doing my homework on you, man, it's almost like I want to be you. Envious, jealous. I admire your path to who you are right now. Now, walk with me here, because we got on before on off mic, and we were saying you look like achievement. And I want to talk about the power of achievement, because you were on that football field, and you accomplished the dream of being a professional football player. But I remember my last year in Jacksonville, and I'm sitting there with another stinger in my neck, knowing that my good days are behind me. What's next? And I remember peeking at the owner's box and watching all of the executives having hot dogs and cotton candy and playing with the grandkids. And I was like, up there is true power. Up there is another level of achievement. Talk to me about that feeling from being on the field and that power of achievement to right now. You are a team president.
I wouldn't downplay the achievement that the two of you and I experienced on the field. In the league. I think it's a little bit relative, and I want to knock it. It's a little apples and oranges. I hear what you're saying 100%. But, you know, the achievement on the field is to be commended, because there are so many things that had to happen for you to get there and for you to be there, even with that stinger and all the things that we still carry in our bodies as a result of playing in the league. There are so many things that had to happen. So many people that paved the way for you were mentors at the right time. Who bailed you out when you made a wrong decision, who coached and encouraged you, who called out the greatness in you. There's so many people that contributed to that. I don't want to downplay that at all. And your own ingenuity, your grit, your desire, all that stuff. I think in some cases, achievement, and I'll go to corporate America because I'm just now getting back into sports. I don't know really the echelon here yet. But in corporate America, some of those folks at the highest levels didn't do half that stuff. So I wouldn't downgrade it in a different way. But those who have and have come a well-wrought path, and this is actually one of the ways that this is one of the things that in my conversations with Dan Snyder really inspired me. This man started his own business from scratch. Say what you want about him. He didn't come from money. You know, he developed that along the way on his own. There is something about those folks who have achieved in that way that is very similar. They just chose a different path because the asset they had and the opportunities they had were different. But I think you, me, and all of us are now at an inflection point where we can say, how do we bridge over into that world if that is something that is attractive to us? And it's a different set. It's a different sphere of influence of which to have influence. And brother, if that's something you aspire to, you could absolutely do it. I sort of did it on accident, just following my inner nerd. I came to it by accident. But I wouldn't downplay the one over the other. Both are valuable. And I'm eager to see more of us in both.
Man, appreciate you, Jason. Great success to you. And if you want to text me a daily proverb or, you know, just a daily word, hit your boy up. Appreciate you, big
dog. I'm going to hit you with some silliness now.
You already know our role, man. Coming up, for the first time in his career, Tom Brady has an offensive-minded head coach. Tell you why that might not be a good thing. But speak for yourself.
Oh, he just hit me already. Thanks, Jason.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Tom Brady is having a lot of firsts after 20 years in New England. Beyond joining a new team, Brady told Peter King that Bruce Arians is his first offensive head coach, including high school as well. Bill Belichick is known for defense, while Arians is a total opposite. He even said this offseason, quote, "I'm not looking for a check down Charlie quarterback." We join now by LeVar Arrington. That dude, what's up, LeVar? But Marcellus, I'm coming to you first, bro. You think having an offensive head coach could actually work against Tom Brady?
Yeah, great question. I think it can work against him. First, let's start with the premise of reality, which is he became the GOAT,
Tom Brady with a defensive-minded coach. 20 years of greatness, say what you want about Bill Belichick, but he came from the defensive side of the ball, and look what he was able to do with a six-rounder, turn him into a GOAT. So there's a reality versus a hypothetical or something that people are saying is idealistic in terms of offensive-minded coach in Bruce Arians and offensive player quarterback in Tom Brady. So let me dispel that also. When you talk about people, what you're really seeing is this concoction, this balancing act between experiences and expectations. And people all of a sudden start to think, and the ego certainly starts to feel, that they know the best route. If you get into a situation where, let's just say there are too many chefs in the kitchen, how are we gonna eat what we trying to cook up?
Pick it up.
We need a sous chef, don't we? Don't we need a waitress, waiter? We need someone to run the register. We need a lot of different elements. Not everyone always walking into a situation thinking that they know best. I don't anticipate friction, but I also don't anticipate a supplement in terms of greatness, because he was great already with a defensive-minded coach.
I don't see there being a problem. I don't think this will work against him. This comes down to communication at this point in Tom Brady's career, and really in Bruce Arians' career as well. And yes, if you can keep those and continue those kumbaya moments, which Bruce Arians has proven, if anybody who has been around him, that is an extraordinary man. He's not just an okay guy. He's not just a good coach. Bruce is an extraordinary man, and I have had the honor and privilege of spending time with him and blown away by the type of person that he is. So when I look at Tom, I look at Tom as an extraordinary young man. Yeah, young man, right? My class, my draft class.
I'll say he's older than you.
I'm retired. He is a little older than me, but I sunned him in college, so it counts. I think that Tom and Bruce will have a relationship that meshes, because they are both trying to accomplish something that is great to both of them. I don't see this being an issue. I think Byron Leftwich will leverage this the right way, so he won't become a problem in the scenario. So I look for them to communicate, and that's what's going to keep them on the straight and narrow path.
Bro, I think it's absolutely going to be a problem. I completely disagree with you, LeVar, because if you want to take, for example, a NASCAR driver, put a NASCAR driver behind a fast car so that thing can giddy up. Don't put a NASCAR driver behind a tank truck. Bruce Arians, he's a NASCAR driver. He's an offensive-minded head coach. He needs a big arm, big play, right now quarterback. If we were talking about Tom Brady 2007, 2011, even 2016, I would be like, yes, we have no issues. Give Tom Brady the offensive-minded head coach, because Tom Brady has the ability to still be that extremely high execution, offensive, big arm talent. Bruce Arians said he don't want to check down Charlie. Tom Brady only averaged 6.6 yards an attempt last year. Jameis Winston, the quarterback for the Bucs last year, averaged 8.2 yards an attempt. But really, let's call spades spades and let's call facts facts. Tom Brady, inarguably the greatest quarterback of all time in NFL history. But in all six of Tom Brady's Super Bowls, he had a top 10 scoring defense. Let me say that again, so some of y'all might have slept on that. In all six of Tom Brady's Super Bowls, top 10 scoring defense. What does that mean? While Tom Brady was excellent, bar none, he still had top-tier defenses. The Bucs defense last year, scoring defense, 29th. I know what you're going to say. Come on, Nacho. Jameis Winston, he threw 30 picks. Yes, but to go from 29th to 9th, that's not no 30 interception ordeal. The Bucs defense still had gaps. The Bucs would benefit when you have Tom Brady now from having that defensive-minded head coach based on Tom Brady. So I think it absolutely will be a problem.
Ooh, that boy came strong. And now I must use my Aikido and use you against yourself.
Aikido?
My martial arts, Aikido. Yes, watch this. Bill Belichick knew what he was great at. And more so, he knew what he wasn't great at. And he kept his distance in terms of empowering his offensive coordinators. So in situations where there was a rub, Bill Belichick knew to lend himself to his defensive prowess instead of his offensive mindset, because he empowered those on that side of the ball. So now we're in a situation where the lights are bright. Because you remember, every offseason is not like this offseason. And this offseason, guys were out there throwing to the receivers left and right, team after team. But only one had a helicopter flying over it and spying on it. And it was the Tampa Bay Bucks because of Tom Brady. So now we walk into this same meeting room. And I've been in that meeting room before as a defensive player with a defensive-minded coach. And you got a former quarterback there by the name of Byron Leftwich who's running that meeting. And then you can look right there and you got a GOAT quarterback sitting there listening to a guy who got drafted after him, who's younger than him, calling plays that he may agree with or not agree with. And then Bruce Arians with the Kango just walks in that same meeting room and he's like, oh, that's what y'all drawing up right now. Interesting. The chain of command can get a little affected in those moments. I've seen it when people are starting to grab a slice for that credit in that credit pie to see where do I come in this tug of war of credit. And that's the only thing that may come back to haunt this situation. Because when Tom Brady's in the building and the helicopters are flying over it, everyone wants to make sure they put their best foot forward and maybe they step on each other's toes.
Y'all finish? Are y'all finished? Are y'all done? That is, these
you better
are
have just, some fire then.
I'm just trying to be balanced.
These are ridiculous points. There's not going to be an issue because Bruce Arians is an offensive-minded offensive-minded coach. There's not going to be a problem with the chain of command in Tampa Bay. To say that all of these things are looked over and after sights of what you're going to do when you bring him in and you're letting go of the quarterback that you had that you drafted before his tenure as a coach, but you drafted as a number one pick for your team. They went through all of these mental gymnastics. They had those conversations with Tom Brady. They had those conversations with the other people in and around the organization. They had that conversation with Byron Leftwich. Let's not diminish the fact that the amount, and you say this all the time, Marcellus, the amount of scrutiny and discrimination that takes place in the National Football League, they have probably exhausted so many conversations with Tom Brady, with one another as a staff. And another point to add to this, do you guys know where Bruce Arians cut his teeth and made himself a popular person as a coach, as a guy that would be able to take over a team as a head coach?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, let's not be misled. Bruce Arians knows what a defensive mentality oriented staff organization place looks like. The DNA of the Steelers is defense, but yet and still, he created a ton of success in his tenure there in Pittsburgh. He understands what defense means and how it represents a team. He also understands what it is to have a big personality at the quarterback position and at other positions as well. This will not be an issue for Bruce Arians. It will not be an issue for Tom Brady that Bruce Arians is an offensive-minded head coach. Not one bit.
Okay.
Convincing.
Yeah, it was convincing, except you said that they've talked about it and had endless discussions about it. But talking about it and living through it.
I would assume.
Through it is a completely different world. You know why? Because when you're talking about it, you don't have the emotional context that you have when you're living through it. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go to counseling. Everything is fine in the counseling's office. Everything's good on that counseling.
What happened when you leave?
When you get back to the crib, it's a problem, homeboy. Let me tell you this. I've been here live and in person in a meeting room, and you've been there, team meeting room. Everybody there, all 53. Then we break up, O and D, all right? So we're sitting there, 27, 26, whatever the numbers are. Then we go from there to position rooms. Mm-hmm. And then the head coach, depending on what he likes, finds himself drifting at times. And sometimes he can drift right into your position meeting room and you're like, I got a coach up there already saying do one thing and now here you come in here, Kango kid, talking about a different thing. So look, I know he's coached Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Carson Palmer, Jameis Winston, but none of those guys were a GOAT for 20 years in one place and then had to go to a new home and establish and plant their flag at that new home to prove that they are not just a system quarterback.
But wouldn't you want that qualification? Wouldn't you want that name another coach in the National Football League that can boast that they coach those players. Wouldn't you want that to be the situation?
Oh, yeah.
Whether it doesn't work out or not, you got to admit he has the resume where, to me, what you're saying, he'll be able to navigate that. I don't think he's going to be that type of a distraction.
Aikido.
Convincing, very convincing. All I know is this. Tom Brady with an offensive coach, that's a whole lot of pressure. You know what they say, pressure burst pipes. Coming up in our big story, we'll tell you why Joe Judge is headed for trouble in the Big Apple. Mm. Next, Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai.
We strong.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Marcel Swally. He's Emmanuel Acho, who's that great.
Now, you can call me a kid if I'm a baby goat. I'm a baby greatest of all time. I'll take it.
Okay. Where that bros, bruh? With pride. Let's get it started with a big story presented by Hyundai and talk about the New York Giants, who are being led by new head coach Joe Judge. Judge comes from Bill Belichick's coaching tree, and he's taking some lessons from his former boss. The Giants don't have names on the back of their jerseys, and players and coaches are running laps for mistakes. Yes, I said running laps. It reminds wide receiver Sterling Shepard of playing in middle school. Take a listen to Judge's explanation.
Well, there's consequences on the field for making mistakes. In a game that costs you 5, 10, or 15 yards, you know, in a practice, there has to be consequences so we learn how to deal with our mistakes.
So, Acho, is this a smart approach by Joe Judge?
That's the dumbest approach I've ever heard in my life. I wasn't going to let you finish the question. It's the dumbest. Giants fans, on behalf of everyone intelligent everywhere, I apologize for your 2-14 record this season. I have to go ahead and apologize. And it's not your fault, Giants fans. It's not your fault that you have dedicated yourselves to an organization that is hiring a coach that is instilling imbecilic practices. I'm not sure if imbecilic is a word, but the practices that Joe Judge are instilling are so dumb that imbecilic is the only word, Marcellus, that will fit. That is the only word that will fit the crime. Bro. You're a professional athlete.
Yeah.
That means you should be intrinsically motivated. Intrinsically motivated meaning motivation that comes from within. Mm-hmm. If you're not intrinsically motivated, then you're motivated extrinsically. Money, fame, females, whatever you want to call
Here.
It. All of those things work.
Yeah.
What doesn't work is fear-based motivation. Hey, if y'all mess up, y'all finna have to bear crawl. If y'all mess up, y'all running wind sprints. Those are tactics you use on kids, and you use them on kids, and not baby goat kids. You use them on real kids, peewee children,
itty-bitties.
Because you have no other way to motivate an 8-year-old than to say, hey, if you jump off sides, you're going to have to run wind sprints. How are you about to make a 30-year-old grown man make $10 million a year run a wind sprint for an error? It's so dumb. But here's what's dumber. This is, and I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry, actually.
Don't be
I'm not
sorry.
Apologizing because Joe Judge, you're tripping. Everybody, bro, you leave Bill Belichick and you want to emulate the Bill Belichick way. Well, I saw Bill do this, so I'm going to. You not Bill Belichick,
bro.
You ain't him. You ain't never going to be him. Don't even try to be him. You're too far from being him. So just stop it. He's trying to emulate what he saw with Bill Belichick and the Patriot way. The Patriot way, it ain't the Giant way, coach. The Patriot way is not. And so don't try to emulate another man. Be your own man. Take your Bill Belichick jersey off, okay? Go hang that up in your closet. Not even your master closet. Hang it up in the guest bedroom closet so nobody see you got the Bill Belichick jersey in your house and live your own life, Joe Judge.
Goodness! You left no more meat on the bone,
meat on that rib.
I came
some meat on that
I
rib.
I went upstairs to get something and came downstairs. Ain't no more food left. But you know what? I see something over there. But he ain't get it all. Oh, man, this just rings of new sheriff in town alert. New sheriff in town alert. And you being nice to the Giants fan saying they're going 2-14. I'm going to tell you like we used to say in the locker room. Them boys going 0-17 in a 16-game season. Y'all just lost one before y'all even played it. This is insane. It doesn't even land in the sport of football. You broke down mentally and in terms of you being motivated. It doesn't do anything for you. Let's talk about how it doesn't even help you in the game of football, even as a penalty. We are anaerobic creatures. And see, I played in the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s, and I saw the evolution of the sport. And I remember when coaches were really talking about, yeah, y'all run some laps, and we're going to discipline y'all and get them in shape. And then somebody realized there's no 600-yard football play. So whatever we're applying over here is not going to be applicable on this football
field. Talk about it.
So I remember Usain Bolt, greatest Olympian, greatest sprinter of all time. One day they asked him, Usain, what would you run in a mile? He says, I don't know. I've never run a mile. You know why he never run a mile?
Because he didn't have to.
He didn't have to.
Because he didn't have to.
Because it did, even in discipline and punishment, it didn't apply to his world. Joe Judge, you're doing your players a disservice. But let's get LeVar in on this. And LeVar, smart approach by Joe Judge after what we just said.
I'm very disappointed in both of you.
What? This dude.
LeVar, don't do this, LeVar. Everybody don't do this, LeVar. I'm going to come from the top rope if you do this.
I'm trying to be a coach, too, I think. You trying to get on the stage.
Go ahead.
Y'all finished?
Yes.
I am so very disappointed in both of you. Both of you go to your rooms, clean up your rooms, and go to bed. No
Take
TV
a lap.
Tonight. All right? This is a cultural thing. You didn't even mention culture. This team has made the playoffs how many times in the last 8 years, guys? How many times?
What'd you say?
What you talking about, Willis?
Echo.
How many times have they made the playoffs in the last 8 years?
Chill.
Get to the point.
Once.
Get to the point.
Yeah, we got it.
They made it once.
We got it.
There's a cultural problem here in New York. And when somebody comes in and begins to deteriorate, destroy, and break down a losing culture, there's going to be resistance, and that resistance is going to be met with a ton of vitriol and a ton of anger and resistance, like the things that you guys are saying. Oh, it's moronic. He's an idiot. These are grown men. You want to know the biggest problem that most NFL players have when they come into the league? They go through an identity crisis. And this identity crisis is the minute that you put on a pro uniform and you become a professional football player in the National Football League, for some strange reason, even based off of the reasoning that you guys gave, you don't believe that you should be treated as a football player anymore. Because you make money now? Because I have a home with kids in the house? No, this is still football. And for what it's worth, there is a consequence, and there are. Where are y'all going with this? I don't understand how you guys are diminishing what building a culture. You know what running laps as a coach who didn't have that pro come out and do it right, or that pro who didn't do it right with that extrinsic I don't even. Hey, listen, you went too far out of my grammar for me to understand it. And all I'm going to say is that this is a litmus test of how you measure somebody's commitment to wanting to play the game and wanting to win the game. That's why I don't, none of y'all, how many Pro Bowls you got, Marcellus?
Three.
How many Super Bowls?
Started in one. No Super Bowls.
Okay, how many?
Record
how
contract,
many you got,
though. Record contracts, okay?
How many you have, Emmanuel
Acho? I'm a Pro Bowler on television, sir. Oh.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Now,
y'all are messing up.
Can I hope
football
coaches,
is not soft.
Coaches
not
all
soft.
Over the world. I hope you kept your televisions on for ratings' sake, but I hope you muted it when LeVar was talking because he was talking nonsense. That's what I
no
hope.
Way.
I hope every no coach way. Didn't hear a lick of anything LeVar just said. LeVar, let's talk about culture since that's
please,
what you want to talk
please.
About.
Yes.
Let's talk, you know,
about
let's talk about another man who wore the Bill Belichick jersey and how that fared for him. Eric Mangini, coach for the Jets, then coach for the Browns.
Chill.
He so much so wore this Belichick jersey that he named his children their middle names after Bill Belichick. I digress. The point being, Eric Mangini, he said, man, we fined in players. He fined a Browns player $1,700 for drinking a $3 bottle of water in a hotel and forgetting to pay, because that was the Browns way, because that would have been the Bill Belichick way. You know what Mangini said after he thought, he reminisced in 2019?
You know I love me some Mangini, though.
He came out and he said, you know, one of the difficult things about being in that position, you try to emulate other people. That was his biggest mistake. You see, LeVar, you're out here talking about trying to emulate a culture, trying to build a culture.
I said build a culture.
You build a culture the way you know how. You don't borrow somebody else's culture, the Patriots culture, and try to build it in New York. New York were bright lights.
You don't
New
borrow,
York were Times
you don't,
Square. Where
you don't borrow
drops.
What your daddy taught you? You don't use what your daddy taught you?
Not if it doesn't apply. Not if what your daddy taught you was in a different
how
city,
you
a different state, a different place.
If it applies or not.
Well,
I'm
starting to see a little difference in mindset. Whatever your daddy taught you could be your premise, but evolve whatever daddy told you and use what surrounds you in terms of different resources, including mental resources. Mm. These kids are born and raised with specialized training. They've been told, they've been sold, and they have gained from knowing that things that they do, no matter what it is, even in punishment, needs to apply to the task at hand. Running laps is archaic. Even if you're trying to defend it. Even if you're trying to say that's how we were built.
You
we were
what?
Built.
Marcellus, let me get some of this meat. Because LeVar, my daddy, he might have taught me to wear penny loafers. Am I wearing penny loafers?
Nah.
No. Penny loafers are archaic. When you know you took the penny and you still put that joint in the shoe.
Hurt
your toes. That was dope back in the 90s.
My toes.
That's archaic right now.
I rock my ankle cleavage and my European suits. My daddy might have taught me to wear a tie. But you see your boy, I ain't wearing no ties. My daddy wasn't wearing no brooches. You take what you can take and what's applicable, LeVar, and you leave the rest back at the crib with your daddy and them. Joe Judge,
the
Dolphins are taking it slow with Tua.
Soft.
But I'll tell you why they be foolish not to cut them loose. Next, speak for yourself, presented by Hyundai. Where my penny loafers?
Yo, Don't listen. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's head out to Miami, where expectations are sky high for Tua Tagovailoa. The rookie quarterback took reps in the first practice with pads Monday, and reports say he looked healthy. Tua's coming off hip dislocation surgery, which has made some wonder if he'll play at all this season. Head coach Brian Flores said, quote, "We're taking this one day at a time with Tua." Unfortunately, LeVar is back with us.
That dude.
But Marcellus.
After taking a lap.
Y'all got to have some reasoning on this show.
Marcellus, I need to know. Is it safe for Tua to play this rookie season, or should the Dolphins sit him? What you think?
Oh, man, go out there and play that dude. Man, look, the Dolphins started to build a culture last year despite having tons of injuries.
You about to talk about culture too, Marcellus?
Yes, culture. I am. Culture. I borrow from everybody to get to this greatness. There we go. Don't change up now and play it safe. My golf cart doesn't have a governor. You cannot ride with me talking about let's hit the gas and the brake, because you're introducing weakness to this young man. And at this age and with his mindset and with his body and the cell reproduction, basically at that age, you're a damn walking laboratory. Everything that happens to you, instantly you can recover from. And you know what you can't recover from? If they all of a sudden put you in a protected environment and introduce you to weakness. And this is what I'm talking about. I was introduced to weakness. After year three, I had a back surgery. And now I'm a commodity. I'm a starter. They just let go the all-time great. And they're like, look, we're going to protect you. And I was like, okay, I get where you're coming from. But as we were talking in the last segment, you also have to stress somebody so that you can recover from that same stress and grow. That's how you get in shape. That's how you get bigger, faster, stronger. It's still managing that stress and introducing yourself to it so that you can respond to it. I don't like the fact that they're right now saying to it, chill, chill, chill. And then one day, hit the gas. Zion Williamson went through that this year. How'd that turn out for the Pelicans?
You know what?
How'd that turn out for the Pelicans?
When you don't have a strong argument, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes you have to overtalk. That's what Marcellus was doing.
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to keep this short, sweet, and I'm going to keep it simple. The objective for the Dolphins and Tua isn't to win a game. The objective is to win the Super Bowl. That's the point-blank period goal. Look at the Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks in 2010. You got Mahomes, Brady, Foles, in the 2010s, the decade. Okay, okay. You got Mahomes, Brady, Foles, Flacco, Wilson, Rodgers. Those are the Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks. Seven of those winning Super Bowls were led by the quarterbacks who didn't start the opener of their rookie season. The goal, Marcellus, is not to win week one.
How you gonna change the argument?
No. You sit him because your main goal is to win a Super Bowl. The three quarterbacks, and now it is.
They're going to win a Super Bowl.
For the season, man.
Yes, because long-term goal. I'm saying you should sit him.
Some of those dudes behind all-time great players.
Doesn't matter.
We're talking about injury. We're talking about you're ready to go, but we're not going to let you go.
Yes,
now, give me that list again with guys who are ready to go and we're going to let them go.
I'm saying either way, bro. What are we going to do right now?
That's a different way. You're ready to go, but we're going to let you go.
Why would you draft him that early in the draft?
Because he's that good.
You're going to sit him.
Because
you don't know.
Y'all are so short. Since when are you all?
Don't know if he's that
good. Y'all have proven yourselves to be educated, and y'all are so short-sighted.
If you have to sit him, you know how much football he will have missed? You don't know if that's going to translate into the National Football League. There are a lot of Alabama players that come up
and
fall on their faces in the National Football League. You know, it's not a given that Tua is the guy in the National Football League. If you're going to use that high of a draft pick, and oh, by the way, add the interesting scenario of a black head coach, how much time does he have before he doesn't have a job based on
Jason Wright
losses?
You better go ahead and do what you need to do. LeVar,
I can't let y'all get away with this.
You're gonna use a
word, a conglomerate word like cell reproduction, and still in the same sentence be a short-sighted individual. I'm gonna give you a Wileyism. Let me give you. Can I?
It better be on my level. It better be.
The reason people don't get what they want is because they're willing to give up what they want most for what they want now. Y'all want to give up what the Dolphins want most, a Super Bowl, for what they want now, to roll Tua out on play number one, game number one. What's up? Because I just out Wileyism to Wileyism.
You really did. You're getting in the book. No credit, but you're in the book right now. Here's the thing. How do you learn how to play football? It ain't in the weight room. It ain't on 7-on-7s. It ain't sitting there saying we having passing drills. It's playing football. So you know how much of the lesson that he's going to miss out on by actually not going out there when he is fully capable of going out there. There's no obstacles in the way except the ones you're placing in front of him. That's in the book as
practice
well.
Practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. Coming up, Uncle Jimmy found the yellow brick road. We'll ask him if he was impressed by Wiley's trash Clippers. Next! Speak for yourself.
Get your energy up, bro. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's go back to my Clippers, who took advantage of Kristaps Porzingis' injection in the third quarter.
Yeah, they did.
To take game one. Joined now by Uncle Jimmy. Yeah, my Clippers look like a championship-level team, right?
Hey, man, look here. I thought I was watching a Clippers game. But come to find out, evidently, I was watching an episode of Oz, The Wizard of Oz.
How you figure? Is that a yellow brick road?
I was lost as hell up until we got to that part where I saw the cowardly lion get him some heart and finally make a shot, a.k.a. Paul George.
Oh, don't do that. Playoff
proof. And then at that point, I suddenly realized, yo, man, Kawhi and it really do look like a scarecrow that need to get his cornrows redid. And then I started thinking, I said, who the hell would Marcellus Wiley be if his heathenistic ass was on this team? He would have to be the tin man. Or should tin I say man? The sin man.
Why?
You know? And then the part that really upset me is Pat Bev and Reggie Jackson looking like the flying monkeys out there on defense.
Hey, chill out, dog.
Hey, that's what Doc Rivers is talking about.
Hey, you get those guys out there, you come around.
I'll tell you. Don't say no more time for Uncle Jimmy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.